In the bustling financial district of 1850s New York, five simple words would forever change the landscape of American literature. I would prefer not to. These words, uttered by the pale, ghost-like figure of Bartleby, continue to haunt readers and philosophers alike. Set against the backdrop of Wall Street's emerging capitalism, Herman Melville's mysterious tale follows an elderly lawyer's encounter with the strangest employee he would ever hire. What begins as a straightforward workplace story evolves into a profound meditation on resistance, human connection, and the machinery of modern life. The genius of Bartleby lies in its ability to function simultaneously as a compelling narrative and as a philosophical puzzle that has captivated minds from Kafka to Zizek. In our age of burnout and quiet quitting, this 19th-century scrivener's gentle but absolute resistance feels more relevant than ever. What happens when someone simply steps outside the social contract, neither fighting nor fleeing, but simply preferring not to? The lawyer's Wall Street office operates like a calibrated machine before Bartleby's arrival. Turkey produces excellent morning work but becomes reckless after lunchtime drinks, while Nippers suffers from irritability before noon but works productively afterward. Together, they effectively create one functional employee across a full day. Gingernut, the 12-year-old office boy, runs errands and fetches the cakes that gave him his nickname. When business growth demands another copyist, Bartleby appears, pallidly neat, pitiably respectable, incurably forlorn. Unlike typical applicants, he simply materializes at the door. Initially, he's exceptional, producing enormous quantities of documents with mechanical precision, working silently even on Sundays. The first problem emerges when asked to help proofread. "I would prefer not to," he responds in a mild, firm voice, not refusing outright, but stating a preference with quiet dignity that defies workplace hierarchy without direct confrontation. The lawyer finds himself caught between authority and this strange, passive resistance that offers no handhold for discipline. Bartleby's retreat unfolds through a series of small refusals. Each "I would prefer not to" expands his non-participation, declining to verify copies, run errands, or explain himself, all delivered with mild detachment. Yet he continues his copying work silently, becoming a strange fixture, present but increasingly remote. The discovery that Bartleby lives in the office reveals a life compressed to mere square feet, with only a toothbrush, soap, and threadbare blanket. When he finally announces, "I have given up copying," his withdrawal is complete. He stands for hours gazing at the blank brick wall outside his window, having abandoned all activity. His past remains a mystery. When questioned, he responds, "Would you not prefer that I not answer?" His resistance is passive yet immovable. He doesn't argue or justify, he merely states preferences with philosophical calm, maintaining a dignity more disruptive than any confrontation. The lawyer's struggle with Bartleby forms the emotional core of the story. His observation that "nothing so aggravates an earnest person as a passive resistance" shows how Bartleby's quiet persistence affects him more deeply than open rebellion would. The lawyer demonstrates genuine compassion, defending Bartleby, accommodating his behavior, and offering alternative employment. Yet he retreats when his comfort or reputation is threatened. When associates express discomfort with Bartleby's presence, the lawyer prioritizes appearances over compassion, rationalizing, "I might give alms to his body, but his body did not pain him. It was his soul that suffered, and his soul I could not reach." Don't we all face similar dilemmas? When confronted with suffering that defies easy solutions, how often do we choose convenience? The lawyer's decision to move his office rather than deal with Bartleby directly mirrors our complicated relationship with social responsibility, inviting us to question our own moral boundaries. Walls dominate Bartleby, physical, social, and psychological barriers that confine and separate. The office is surrounded by walls, with Bartleby's window facing a brick wall just 3 feet away. This dead wall reverie becomes his primary occupation after he stops copying, suggesting both imprisonment and rejection of society's false promises. Wall Street itself embodies capitalism's demands for productivity and conformity. Workers function as human copying machines, reproducing documents without creative input. The office arrangement reinforces this. Turkey and Nippers share a table, their complementary dysfunctions creating one functional worker valued only for utility. Bartleby's famous phrase asserts human will. By expressing preference rather than outright refusal, he maintains dignity while exposing the voluntary nature of social compliance. His resistance reveals that the walls constraining human potential exist through shared agreement to prioritize productivity over personhood. The story's climax in the tombs makes this metaphorical imprisonment literal. Found strangely huddled at the base of the wall, Bartleby dies having refused food. The prison's nickname suggests conformity is a living death, while Bartleby's physical death paradoxically represents his ultimate freedom. The epilogue reveals Bartleby's previous employment at Washington's dead letter office, a detail that illuminates the entire narrative. There, he sorted undelivered mail, witnessing countless instances of failed human connection. These dead letters represent human tragedy in miniature. Mercy funds never relieving suffering, pardons arriving too late, and declarations of love forever unread. Each unfulfilled intention induced what the narrator calls pallid hopelessness in even the most resilient souls. This context transforms our understanding of Bartleby's infamous phrase. His response becomes an existential position derived from witnessing communication's futility. If messages consistently fail to reach their destinations, why participate in meaningful work? The dead letter metaphor extends throughout the story. The lawyer's attempts to understand Bartleby are themselves like dead letters, messages never reaching their recipient. Their conversations demonstrate failed communication. The lawyer speaks from social convention, while Bartleby responds from beyond these considerations. The story's final line, "Ah, Bartleby, ah, humanity," becomes recognition of our universal condition of isolation. Bartleby represents the perhaps impossible challenge of bridging the gap between individual consciousness and genuine connection. Bartleby's gentle resistance has outlasted the walls that confined him. His famous phrase has entered our cultural lexicon as a model for maintaining dignity through withdrawal of consent, from quiet quitting to nonviolent protest. Philosophers like Deleuze and Agamben see in Bartleby a paradigm for resistance outside traditional categories, creating what Deleuze terms a zone of indetermination that disrupts binary oppositions. In political discourse, Bartleby politics describes protest through non-participation, particularly when direct confrontation might prove dangerous. The story's enduring resonance suggests Melville captured something essential about modern existence, the tension between productivity demands and human autonomy. As our lives become increasingly defined by productivity metrics, Bartleby's quiet insistence feels more revolutionary than ever. We return to this enigmatic figure because he embodies a fundamental question. How do we maintain our humanity in systems that treat us as functions? In a world demanding participation without meaningful connection, Bartleby's "I would prefer not to" remains a powerful assertion of what makes us human, the ability to choose, even if that choice is simply to stand still.